first thing is to say what it was not. It was not intended to be a classroom textbook. It was intended to be well, we use the term monograph. I'm not sure that that has any well-defined meaning. We intended a working engineer to be able to learn about digital signal processing from the book.
Somebody familiar with, a working engineer.
Somebody with an ordinary engineering, ordinary electrical engineering background, or somebody who understood computers, or both. I, by the way, have always had this rule of thumb when publishing anything. And that is, assume that your audience is somebody who knew what you knew when you started working in the field. Not what you knew when you started working on the topic, but when you started working in the field. It's sort of a rule of thumb that, that served me very well. Of course, the field keeps, you know, moving, become more and more specialized, but anyway, so I wrote the book to be something that I could have understood when I started working on digital signal processing in 61, right out of school with a master's degree. And, Ben and I shared the writing. I guess we shared chapter one, which was kind of general introductory material. A little bit about speech. I think he must have written chapter two, which was Z-transform and digital filtering in general. Chapter three was the one on design techniques and the approximation problem. And I did the lion's share of chapter three. Chapter four was all mine, had to do with a simulation compiler. Actually, I think I remembered the chapter one. That was chapter five was the simulation compiler. Yeah, chapter four on quantization effects we shared. Chapter five was this block diagram representation of computer programs. Do you have this?
No, I have to get my hands on one.
It's not going to be easy because it's out of print. Chapter six was all mine. Seven was Tom Stockham's chapter. And eight was Al Oppenheim's chapter, and that's the book. It turns out that there's some interesting material in chapter seven, which I wrote and kind of added to Tom's chapter. I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was significant for me later on. Let's see if I can find this little footnote. Ah, yes. This particular section, section 7-8, is one that I wrote. And it turned out to be significant later on. This chapter was about his high-speed convolution and correlation method. And after Tom had written a chapter and before the book was actually set, I did some work. Really, was it was completely off the wall. It happened that I was trying to do something involving making random noise on a computer. You know, random noise is ever present in nature, but computers don't have it. And so the algorithms for generating pseudo-random noise tend to involve doing a complicated computation and taking the result of that as a sample and then using it as the starting point for the next computation. And the way you analyze these things and make sure they don't get stuck, you know, producing a steady state number is there are theorems in number theory. And I went ahead and learned some number theory. And as I was learning number theory, I realized that some of the equations in number theory, which involve modulo arithmetic, kind of looked similar to difference equations. So I began exploring these analogies, and I discovered some interesting things. One of the things I discovered was that I could take the expression for a discrete Fourier transform, and by permuting the order in which certain computations were done, I could turn the computation into a convolution. And then I could use FFT techniques to do the convolution, but of a different length. It turned out this was easiest when the sequence lengths were prime, which is exactly the length that the FFT wouldn't do anything for you. They had, for FFTs, you needed the length of the sequence to be composite. So I found a way to do the DFT of a prime number of points using FFTs. So that got into this as a chapter. That got into the high-speed convolution chapter. And it was kind of cute. It was mathematically cute. It was also very interesting in later years because it became the basis of the work that Shmuel Winograd did on the Winograd Fourier transform algorithm. Now, at the same time that I had found a way to express a Fourier transform as a convolution, a colleague of mine by the name of Leo Bluestein, who was then at Sylvania, but who had actually shared an office with me a few years earlier when he was at Lincoln Lab, came around one day and he said, "I've got this interesting result." He said, "I can do a Fourier transform when the number of points is a perfect square, and I have this algorithm." His algorithm was not very interesting in itself, but part of the way through explaining the algorithm, he had done some manipulations to change a Fourier transform into a convolution in still another way. It had nothing to do with number theory. It had to do with multiplying the input waveform by what engineers would call a chirp waveform. It was a sinusoid whose frequency increases continuously as the as time progresses. And then if you then would agree afterward to multiply the, or to unmultiply the Fourier transform by a chirp, what you found in the middle was you were convolved by a chirp, with a chirp. So multiplication involved post-multiplication to undo it. Was another way of converting a Fourier transform to a convolution. And I said to him, "Leo, we can use the FFT to do convolutions, so, you know, forget about your clever little algorithm for doing the middle part. Let's use the FFT for that." The advantage of that was that the chirp algorithm would work for any length sequence, and so you could do any length sequence using any length FFT. That was the so-called chirp-Z transform. I showed the chirp-Z transform algorithm to Larry Rabiner, who was and still is at Bell Labs, and he got excited about it, and he wrote a paper about it, which he co-authored with me in the Bell Systems Technical Journal. Kind of unusual to have a non-Bell author write in the BSTJ, but he did it. So that was, it was in that same time frame, around 1968, 68 or 69, when the book came out. Now, I'm going to be a little bit confused about sequences here, but at the same time that the group of us were getting together with Cooley on a semi-regular basis at IBM, there was another group in the IEEE group that later became Signal Processing Society. It was the Audio and Electroacoustics group. And they had a standards committee. Mm-hmm. And the standards committee had a concept subcommittee. And the concept subcommittee had organized a kind of traveling road show in which they would try to explain to people what they knew about how you should go about measuring noise spectra correctly, mm-hmm. Using rigorous mathematics and algorithms and so on. Basically, it was the material in the book by Blackman and Tukey, which whose title I've forgotten, but I'm sure you've seen a reference to it somewhere. And in doing this traveling road show, they became aware of the fast Fourier transform. And so they kind of changed their mission and became a working group on digital signal processing. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they changed their name to the Signal Processing Subcommittee or something. Mm-hmm. But this committee was the nucleus of what eventually changed audio and electroacoustics, mm-hmm. into signal processing.